Have I ever told you guys about my sneezing thing?
No.
Okay. It's not really that interesting, but I may sound a little weird because I sneezed a whole bunch earlier this morning.
Is it hay fever?
No, it's not. It's not about what causes me to sneeze. It's about my body's reaction to when I have to sneeze. So most people, when they have, and I may have an allergy to something, I don't know, probably do, but most people when they sneeze, it's like, you got to sneeze like two, maybe three times, right? And that's, that's a lot for the day. I sneeze on a regular basis. If I start sneezing, it's a good 15 or 20 sneezes in a row.
Whoa.
Every single time. Now, I've counted, the most I've ever counted is 32. And after that, it was like I stopped. But that's happened many times throughout my life. There's just something gets in my nose, something starts tickling, and then I sneeze. And I sneeze. And I'll tell you, after about 25 or so, it feels like you want to throw up. Your entire body is just like...
I sneezed once the other day unexpectedly, and I think I pulled the muscle in my back. I had to lay down.
Yeah. I've done that too. Anyway, so I had a big sneezing fit this morning for some odd reason, and I tried to clear it all out, but I may sound weird, and I may start sneezing again. So if I do, I apologize. But just want to
let it roll. Let it roll. If you start sneezing, okay. Let it roll.
Yeah, we can count it. Somebody count for me if I start.
This will be great. When Kelly has a sneezing fit, it pretty much just wipes her out. She's like super tired and just like needs to rest for a little bit.
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, it's kind of a full body workout, like all your core, like, you know, and your chest is from like expelling all the air and everything. Yeah, it's a lot. So anyway, I apologize if that happens, but hopefully it will.
Well, let's hope it does.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate that.
We need something to liven this podcast up a little bit.
That's right. The one where Bob died sneezing.
Oh.
That's what we'll title it.
Classic episode.
485. Where are we at? Four what?
We're
four what?
482. This is 482.
Wow. Yeah.
Still no word on the 500. Just
We
have a concept, but no plan. No
concept and a potential sponsor. I think we talked about it in the after show.
Basically, because Jimmy has the note on his desk from last week and still hasn't sent the email. Is that right?
Yeah, but we got time. We got plenty of time.
Yeah. It's not that much time. I mean, like September's pretty close.
we're already planning some things for that time frame of the year, so we need to get this going pretty soon.
Yeah, that's true. I have a couple of other things going on. I'm going to Mesa Central next week.
Oh, cool.
Which I can't believe. And I just got my visa last night you got to apply for a visa for the UK now.
Really?
I got my visa. It's electronic, I think.
Like for any travel?
Just to go to the UK. It's an old rule that they didn't push, but now due to the world politics, they're pushing it. They're making sure everybody, it's tit for tat. It's like, you do this, we're going to do that. And so I went online, and Rachel did it for me. So it wasn't too complicated. But I thought for a second, maybe they'll say no. But just last night, I got a yes. Who knows?
You were hoping they'd say no?
They might say no. Coming back, they might say no.
That's yeah. Fair. I just wonder where I'd be deported to. Rockaway Beach, maybe. That's where I was born. But that's still in the United States, some people think. Yeah. I don't know. You ever hear the song from the Ramones, Rock, Rock, Rockaway Beach? That's where I was born.
Oh, yeah.
It was about you.
That's that's where my family, all my extended, I still have cousins who live there. My whole clan ended up there when they emigrated from Ellis Island.
So, speaking of Ellis Island, have you ever looked at the registries from Ellis Island?
I haven't, but I was on ancestry.com for a little while and you could see stuff. I don't know exactly where signatures and stuff came from, but it is pretty interesting. It was
super interesting. I think I went to I think it was the Ellis Island website. I think, I don't, it's been years since I looked at it, but they have, you know, high resolution scans of all the registry pages of everybody that came through, and you can search them. So you can search for your last name and find when relatives came over and how many people were in the party, how many bags they had. You can see signatures. Whoa. It's wild to me. I mean, it's really, really cool.
It's amazing that they had enough tenacity to keep those records. Yeah. In real time, be like, just come in, come on. You know, people took the time to write all this down.
Yeah. It's, and it's wild because a lot of the people that came over, you know, the names, their last names were not transferable very easily to the person writing that stuff down. So that's when a lot of last names changed coming into the U.S. because they were like, I don't know how to write down Koboslawski or whatever. And then they wrote Smith or they wrote Johnson or they wrote whatever. Right. But anyway, it's cool. Anyway, so you're going to Maker Central. Are you doing anything else while you're over there? Or are you just like,
no, I'm going to hit it and quit. I owe Jocko a visit. We talked about it a little bit because I might see Jocko. I might not. He's got a tight schedule, but, I definitely owe him his own exclusive trip. So Jocko, I'm going to come just for you. I don't want to come and rush it. But my spring and summer is filling up fast. I got to finish the house. I got to finish the car. I mean, I don't think I'll finish the house this year, but I'm actually working on a new video for the house, episode 8. A lot of people ask. I looked. This was strange last night. If you guys use Final Cut, you could stack up the projects inside of all the clips. So I went to my project folder last night for the house to start to throw together the next episode. And there were no episodes in there, which leads me to think, wow, it's been so long. The last video I edited for the house was on iMovie, which seems like 10 years ago for me. So I went and looked. The last video I did for the house was over 6 months ago, which is crazy. Hmm. So it really threw me for a loop that it's been that long. But I'm working on a new episode right now, and hopefully it'll be out by either Saturday or Sunday, episode 8 for the house, which is funny because for me it's like it's an off week. I'm not focusing on a project. So I can do all other stuff. Like I'm working on the car in the background. This is just working on the edit of the content I've shot over the last several months. So these type of weeks for me is really fun and easy because then I could dilly-dally. I'm working on a print plate. I'm having a hard time. My patron's seen this. I'm trying to work on a print plate for – I'm doing a poster for Type on Glue. And the poster says, when you need to glue wood, type bond. It's very, I feel like, do you guys remember that old movie with Dudley Moore when he was an advertising executive? And
Arthur?
No, it was even before that. It was an old one. He was like in every movie. Mm-hmm. He lost his mind. He was an ad executive that lost his mind and then just started telling the truth in his ads. and the famous one was Volvos, boxy, but they're good.
Oh, I've heard that. I didn't know that was from a movie.
It's a Dudley Moore movie, boxy, but good. And they loved it. They went with it. So that's why when you need to glue wood, Type-On. And then there's a picture of Type-On, but it's a half tone. So I'm having a hard time printing the half tone, trying to get it right. So that's a challenge this week. I've been laser etching different plates to try and get the right combination of DPI and so on. So by the time I've made my 15th plate, I'll be an expert at this. And so I'm working on that. And then I'm working on the car. You guys saw some of the clips of me driving the car. Dave from DTB Fab, who's a new bro and an amazing fabricator and extremely talented, extremely, extremely, extremely skilled mechanic. He came over and with Dave and then Keith Drennan from Blackthorn Concepts, who now lives in my neighborhood. So Keith came over. Keith's going to do the wiring. So with those two guys and me and Rob, we got the car going this week. We had no idea if the transmission worked. It stopped when you put it in gear. It felt like it was in gear. But beyond that, we didn't know if it worked. So when you see the clip on Instagram of me backing out of the driveway, that is the very first backing out of the workshop. That is the very first time it has ever moved in my possession. And then I go backwards and then I just spin the wheels for like 20 feet. Just was like, if the transmission don't work, it's not going to work anyway. So I just said, let's just blow the tranny. But it didn't blow. And then I was able to take a leisurely drive around the barns. It drives great. It's unbelievable. It's amazing. I could not believe it. We pulled this car out of the depths of hell and it runs and drives. I can lean under the hood, right? The key is under the hood for now until we fix up the dashboard. But you can just turn the key and the car starts right up. Yeah. Because we knew like one of us would be working on it alone and just playing with it. So I just mounted. Everything's rewired. Like one of the first things Dave did the other day, he just kept snipping, snipping, snipping. He was pulling wire out of the thing like spider webs. He pulled all the wiring out of the car, which is extremely scary to me because I don't know much about that. But Keith tipped me to buy a new wiring harness. So I have a wiring harness that I'm going to work with him. He's going to put in, but I'm going to help him and I'm going to watch. I'm going to be his apprentice putting in the wiring harness in the car and seeing how that whole thing works out. It's easy and fun because it's not a perfect restoration. So there's, we don't have to get too uptight about how and what. He's like, do you want this? I go, I don't care. Do you want that? I go, I don't care. He's like, I need to know. I'm like, I don't care. Just do whatever you want. As long as it doesn't get tangled in the axle. I don't care what happens with the wiring harness. So just working on that. And then last night I made some breakthroughs with putting the wood on. So now that I know it runs and drives, it's really amped me up. And I'm going to keep jamming. And for those that haven't heard sooner, earlier, the car is going to be debuted. Not that anybody really cares. It's the reason I'm making it is for the Rat Rod show at the Blackthorn Resort, which is also where we do the Catskill Mountain Maker Camp. It's the same place. So they have events all year long. So in mid-August every year they do the Rat Rod weekend. So it's really cool. The whole neighborhood fills up with like hot rods and rat rods and classic cars. It's really cool. They have hundreds of cars. So I'm going to, that's going to be my big culmination of all this. This is the reason every year I go and I'm like, next year I'm going to have a car with me. Next year I'm going to have a car. Occasionally I'll bring over one of my pickup trucks, but they're not, they're just stock. But this year is fun because I'll get to show this off.
That's cool. I didn't realize you were like working towards a specific event. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any partnerships or anything. I'm just doing it just because I like the event and just promoting the Blackthorn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I've been up to. And just mentally
and you made preparing. The table for your leather.
Oh, yeah. Last week I had to do I got to do a follow up article for that. That was that build is going to go in the next ARC magazine. Every time I'm working on my leather table, I just always have to clear the table off. I put everything onto the floor. So when I was working on a project for ARC magazine, I always think to myself, what do I really need? And working around and just in my daily routine, I realized, you know what? I need a sidebar. So I made this vintage looking factory table as a sidebar, steel and rivets and stuff. It's fun. It was a fun one. It was a good
I like the little like, I don't know, gusset pieces. I don't know what you would call
them. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like it, I don't think they were necessary at all, but it was a really cool, simple addition to take a normal, like, you know, square tube frame and make it look much nicer and much more interesting.
Yeah. Well, those are throwbacks to the way they would make them if they didn't weld them, because you could really rivet them together and that's how it would be. And, but of course I welded it first and then put them on. So it's a little redundancy, but it's really more for styling. And I say it in the video, it's like, oh, these aren't necessary, but just to make it look old and cool. That's what we want it to be, functional and also look pleasing to the eye. And those, I got that restoration hardware and some of these old furniture throwback companies, they make things like that. They're usually very wimpy, but you can buy these old style factory shelves. And then recently Rachel and I were in an antique store and I saw one of the little tables with those on it. And it reminded me that I've been wanting to do that. And that's really where the impetus came from. When I know I needed the table, I'm like, oh, now's an opportunity to make it look like those vintage factory style shelves. And that was it. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
And I got to use my plasma table and my metal bender, which I don't get to use that often. I have it's probably from the 60s. I have a power brake, which you bend metal and it's three phase. It's got a button.
Does that thing just live outside?
There's a shed at my other shop. There's a covered area. So it's like a carport. All my big heavy metal tools are outside in the carport. They're not directly in the rain and snow, but they're outside. The ones that could, nice. They could tolerate the weather.
Cool. That's David, me. What have you been up to?
So I've been cleaning out all the drawers and the shelves in the shop, getting ready for next week when we do the concrete leveling. So everything has to come out. Yes, that's going to be fun. Everything will fit through the door except for the table saw, so I'm going to take that apart. But
that sounds fun.
Yeah. if you gamify something, it's not so bad. So like, you know, I've got pretty much 3/4 of the shop kind of went through all the drawers and cleaned everything out and donated stuff I don't need anymore and got rid of stuff. And it feels it feels good. Like it's a really good spring cleaning. Like, oh, I have more space than I thought I had. And coming across things like, oh, I remember I bought this because I was going to do this project 4 years ago and never did that. Wonder if I'll ever do that in the future. So doing that, my next video is the lamp video that I talked about last week. And then we started filming another small little project. We're making this little mid-century modern over-stylized trash can, a little waste bin for the rental bathroom. And it's actually the last thing that goes into that bathroom, and that room will be completely done and ready. The lamps are the last thing for the bedroom, and the bedroom will be ready except for the closet, which I'm going to redo the closet in the bedroom. So there's not going to be a dresser there. I'm just going to build in drawers and make a really fancy open closet for guests. So we really wanted to open up the rental last November, and we'll be lucky if we open up this November. And I think I mentioned before, we're dialing it back. It's not going to be what I envisioned at first. It's just going to be a normal house with some furniture that I made, and over time I will make the rest of the furniture. And
what are you dialing back exactly? The fact that you wanted to fabricate every living thing in there?
I wanted to every thing that could be made of wood, I wanted to make out of wood. So all the furniture,
you can always do that in time. You could do it.
Yeah. There was going to be this grand reveal and opening. Right. And then we were going to do the Airbnb does this. And we don't know if we're going with Airbnb or Vrbo or whatever the other one's called, but we'll figure that out when we get there. But they offer these experience packages. So you could rent the place and you can have an experience. So like if you're renting a cabin, you know, maybe part of that experience is you get access to a lake or boats or whatever. And I was going to offer a weekend in the shop where we built a birdhouse or a cutting board.
Oh, that's
cool. Not happening anytime soon. So it is just going to be a nice little Airbnb at first, and then we'll build it into something more grand. But right now it's just costing money, so we need to have it start making, at least paying for itself.
Yeah.
Are you at peace with that, you know? Yes. Like changing the direction, or are you,
I wasn't at first
frustrating? Okay. Yeah.
At first when I was like, this is overwhelming and too much, we were having talks and I was like, I think I want to sell it and actually try again and buy something that is more ready to go. And the value of the property has already gone up since we purchased it. And it's like, no, we should just stick with the game plan, just dial it back, but still work with this. And then in the future, maybe we can get another place. And then, you know, eventually the plan is like, as YouTube dies off and falls, you know, views go away, we have this other thing that we have income for. So, yeah, I'm at peace with it now because I see we're getting closer to the finish line. I see what it could be. It's not right. We're not going to make like boatloads of money, but it is going to be a little bit of income.
Yeah. And really the only thing that's changed, I mean, if I'm understanding correctly, is the timeline. Like you're still going to get to the thing that you wanted to get to. It's just going to
take. Yeah. Yeah. We, you know, the ultimate goal is we want to have a place on the lake. Up in Michigan, there's a whole bunch of lakes and a bunch of cottages, and we rent these places and we stay in at them every once in a while, and we want one of those that we can just go to whenever we want, but also rent out whenever we want. So I mean, we're nowhere near being able to do that, but that's part of the future goals and plans.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's good. I'm glad that you're sticking with it. I mean, you know, you could do whatever, but
I always sit on real
estate just to adjust.
You could always sell it later.
It's true.
Yeah. This is true.
Cool. Let's see. What have I been doing? I'm working on... I've got one video finished for this coming weekend, which is... So the metal fab, the laser welder thing that I got, has a bunch of little tips. Like, you have different tips for different type of cleaning and different for welding and for... the cutting has multiple tips, and they're these little, like, copper tips that you got to stick in the thing. And then there's, like, laser glasses, and there's just a few parts. And it was interesting because that machine is super well-made and engineered, and then you have all these little bits that you have to have, and you can't lose them, but there's no – they don't even send a box for them. Like, there's no way to to keep these little things that you have to have right by the machine. I remember I
said that a couple months ago. Remember I said that when I got my router table?
Oh,
no. I got a router table, and I was like, it comes with all this extra stuff that there's nowhere to put. Why don't they just give you a toolbox with it?
Yeah.
It's best to have it near the machine, and then you got
to... Right, yeah. I mean, and in this case, there's plenty of opportunity physically on the machine to just put inserts for these things to stick. And I was like, well... that's an opportunity to make a thing. So I made a little, the gun for this metal fab has a stand. It's this big steel plate. It's about, I don't know, a foot long or something. It has these two little arm things sticking up at angles. So you can set the gun down in there and you can grab it. It's just a nice, like a MIG gun holder would have, but it's this big plate. And so I ended up designing, a 3D printed plate that would slide onto this thing and mount, and it has inserts for all of these different little tool parts. And so the video is about the exercise of, I've got all this stuff, I have this limited area where I can put all this stuff so that it's always available and always with me. How do I lay it out? How do I model to these unique little weird shapes? And then I, about halfway through, I'm like, I could laser cut this actually, and 3D print it. So then I kind of forked the video and said, like, oh, well, how would I print it versus how would I laser it, and what has to change between them? So it's another kind of problem solving video, which I think is just my thing. I think I've settled into just really enjoying that kind of video and discussion and stuff. So I did that, and I think it came out pretty good. But that's coming out this weekend. I also went out on Sunday. We had a soccer game canceled. One of my kids had a soccer game right in the middle of the afternoon, and it got canceled because of rain. And so I'm sitting there at the house like, man, well, I got free time that I didn't expect. Like, this never happens. And it was weird to sit there and be like, what am I going to do with this time? Anyway, so all of a sudden it hit me like I should go to the farm. So I went to the farm and worked for, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours on the Carmangia in the rain. Just the rain just pelting the top of the building. It's like my favorite thing in the world. Just pelting the building, and no cameras, no, I have to get certain things done. And I just started working on the car, and I made so much progress. It moves so That's much great. Faster. When you're not trying to document things, and it doesn't, you know, just working. And so it was really cool. I got the back end completely, like a big section of the back end completely cut out, new sections spot welded together, got the spot welder out again, and it was like the perfect opportunity to use this thing. So I got a lot of the back end not welded in place, but fit up, and I figured out some stuff I have to correct on the section that I did in the last video just for spacing and bending. And it was really nice to get out there and just like make progress. And you know, and I'm not going to have any video of it. I'm not going to show that. I'm just skipping ahead in the videos because I think I'm at a point now where I just need to get the metal work done and just move on to the next thing eventually. So I'm going to try to get out there, you know, every week or two from now on. I'm going to try to get like an afternoon, not a full day, but just get an afternoon to get out there and just chip away at it. And I think I'll make a lot of progress that way.
The experience I've been having with the Cadillac is I avoid. And then when I start picking at one little scab, I realize, oh, I got to do that. Oh, that. And then all of a sudden you realize you're in a groove.
Yeah.
And you put 2 or 3 hours worth of work in and you've gotten a lot done.
Yeah.
And you just let it flow. And that's what happened last night. It's happened obviously several times, but last night I really got into a groove, and it was a big kick in the butt knowing that the thing runs and drives. Now everyone's like, wow, this is going to be a cool car. because no one's seen it run. No one's heard it run. Everyone's like, okay, good luck with that.
I do feel like there's probably in every car project or even just every big project, there's this like peak somewhere in the middle. You have this uphill that you are climbing where it just seems completely impossible for you ever to make any real noticeable progress. And then you get to like where it cranks up for the first time or, you know, the parts actually line up like they're supposed to or whatever. And then you're on the downhill. And even if it's a long downhill to get to the bottom, you're like, yes, now I have, you know, I have like propulsion to make progress and everything starts to stack up in a good way rather than at the beginning where everything's stacking up in a bad way.
Yeah.
It just seems like a hill you'll never be able to climb, but I'm sure having it drive is probably, probably that peak, you know, probably.
Oh yeah. Now I know it's just not just really for camera because, you know, every time we do something, Rob gets a little uptight about this or that. I'm like, it only has to drive for the weekend of the show. It's not going to take this thing. That's like we've contemplated pulling the motor and rebuilding. I'm like, no. If it starts and drives, that's all that matters. I'm not rebuilding the motor. Not on this. I'll do that on something else that's more worthy.
Well, and I've looked at that too. I'm like, if I'm going to all the trouble of the Ghia, as far down as I've gone on everything, should I just go ahead and rebuild the motor? I'm like, no, it ran. So I should get the car running again. And then
one problem at a time.
Yeah, and then when it stops running, that's when I'll rebuild the motor.
Well, you can take it to that shop.
Yeah, I should drop it off now so I can pick it up in 5 years when the rest of the car is done.
I said that to Dave. I was like, if we get down to it, I go, we got another motor in the other car. Well, that was the morning we were playing with it. We knew it started, but we didn't know if it started efficiently and if some of the problems were going to stay. I learned the very valuable thing. So there wasn't very good compression on all the cylinders, but that's also because the car had sat for so long. So the rings, everything gets locked in place. But when you heat the car up, and we heated it up quite a bit, we let it run for a long time. We let it go through a cycle. And the next day, a lot of the compression was back because the car had run and got heated and cooled and the rings are loose. The oil's doing what it's supposed to do. So a lot of the compression came back, which is something I did not know would be possible.
Yeah, that's surprising. That's cool.
Bob, I took your advice and got a trickle charger for the Impala that's over at the other house. And I was on there all winter. And last week, it started right up. Nice. Almost started right up. It's, you know, it's a carburetor, so it takes a little bit to get going. Yeah. But the battery held up just fine and took it around the block. And I need to take photos and sell that guy.
Nice. That's cool. Well, so I made some progress on the Ghia, which was really nice. I also finished up shooting the main video for the course, which was like...
Oh, cool.
That was a big...
What's the main video?
Like the chapters. Like I still have a bunch of little B-roll I have to go back and get and close-ups of certain things and some screen capture to go over a few parts that need to be updated and stuff. But in the amount of time that I've been updating the course to match it with Fusion has changed again. So I have to go back even from the stuff in January or whatever and, you know, reshoot some screen capture stuff. But the majority of the course is now shot. The stuff like me sitting behind a desk and talking through script and all that stuff.
Is it really not called Fusion 360 anymore? Is it just
called Fusion?
It's just called Fusion.
Yep. And I mean, I think that, you know, there's still a bunch of documentation and stuff that probably hasn't been completely updated, but yeah. So that was a big thing, getting that done, working on the Ghia. And then I've started on the next video is going to be, you can see behind me here. All of that shelf right there is, and everywhere else in my house, is Lego. I just have tons of Lego. That's all stuff from when I was a kid. Like, those are my bricks from when I was, you know, 7, 8 years old and since. But it's all in these random containers, and half of them are, you can't see through them, so you can't see what's inside of them and all this. And then I bought a bunch, as an adult, I bought a ton of sets that I like, but, you know. Anyway, so I'm trying to take control of my office. I'm continuing to chip away at trying to get this space in, you know, shape. And so that entire corner is going to become organized and clean looking and stuff. And so that's the thing I'm working on now, is trying to come up with simple, clever ways to organize a bunch of weird little pieces of things and make a workspace over in that corner on a desk where I can, you know, do that stuff. So that's kind of where I'm working on now. And then I've actually, I think I told you guys that I got some, I got hired to make some simple stuff for my friend. Mm-hmm. I think we talked about it a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so I've been chipping away at that, and it's like shelving, and it's nothing really interesting, but, that stuff has been kind of back burner, just like sitting there left undone. And so I've started chipping away at that. And then randomly I got an email from a local artist in town who wants these big wooden panels for painting with like a frame structure behind them to keep them from flexing and stuff like that. So doing a couple of commission type projects, which is strange, but kind of cool. It's local stuff, which I think is becoming more and more interesting to me. People who are doing things local to me that are creative or that are investment type, you know, and one guy builds businesses and he invests in other people starting their own little things and stuff. And having some connection to local entrepreneurship, I hate that word, but like local people who are putting, you know, who are putting their best foot forward to try to build something on their own. I think that's awesome. And so it's kind of cool to start being connected to some of those people and do some stuff with what they're doing, you know? So anyway, that's kind of what I've been up to. I got a comment yesterday. I told you guys about this before, and I'm hesitant to bring stuff like this up because it sounds like I'm complaining, but I think it was a good impetus for a conversation. I'm not complaining about this. I actually thought it was funny. So the comment was, I haven't seen this guy in several months, and now he looks like a hobo? Question mark. That was my comment.
I didn't expect you to say that on the podcast. We talked about it before. But
I wasn't planning on saying it, but it's a good way to transition into what we're going to talk about. So I saw this comment, and I did start laughing because I know that like my hair is longer. People don't like my hair. Whatever, man. Whatever.
I don't know. I don't know what I looked at. I just forgot all about this. I would have brought it up when we first talked before mics, before the microphone. But a few days ago, I was flipping through pictures, or you know how the phone has Face ID, and like there's like, and you look, and it's like everybody you know is like in the Face ID grid, and there was a picture of the three of us. It might have. Oh, you know what? It was when I was in California, and I took a picture of the computer screen when I was doing the TV show in 2017, and the three of us. Yeah. Look like newborn babies. That was 7 years ago. Well, go ahead, Bob.
Well, it, you know, the comment, it made me laugh because, I mean, I run into stuff like that a lot. And also this made me think about, let me take a little tangent here. I've gotten a few comments over the last, I've been growing my hair out for a year or so. And, you know, growing your hair out, it looks bad most of the time. That's just part of growing your hair out, whatever. And so I get comments about it, and I get comments in person, like people I know who are like, oh, about time for a haircut, huh? That type of thing. But it dawned on me very early in that type of comment that women get that type of comment, get that type of scrutiny about how they look in every possible situation, every day of their entire lives. And I just want to throw that out there because I'm not complaining about the fact that I've gotten a little pushback on how bad my hair looks. I'm voicing it as a way to start another conversation. But I just want to make sure that everybody's aware that pretty much every woman has had to deal with that type of garbage all the time for their entire lives. And so if you're saying something like that to me, you need to, like, if you're saying it to me, you're probably also saying it to women, and you should stop doing that because I think that's uncool.
100%.
Anyway, back to the main story. So I got this comment, and it made me laugh, but I also kind of embraced it. Like, my response to him was, I guess I'm a hobo now. Like, that's fine. And I even put like hashtag hobos rule. You know, I'm going to own it because I've chosen. And I think this is the point that I wanted to get to. I've chosen a while ago that like it's time for me to try something different. It's time for me to decide to change something about myself. And we've talked on here a lot of times about like changing the way we make things or like what tools we use or, you know, like we used to not do lasers and now we do lasers. Didn't do 3D printing. Now we do 3D printing, whatever. But that's not really what I'm talking about. Those are progressions in skill. Those are progressions in capability. I'm talking about I made a conscious choice over the last few years to change things about myself, the way I look, the style that I have, the where I put my time, the effort I put into all sorts of life stuff. You know what I mean? And so the question came up when I get comments like that, the question in my mind is, does that person allow themselves to change, or are they just like, this is the way I am, this is the way I look, and anybody who is not going to do that, I should point it out or not be okay with it? Or so it made me wonder about every time I get something like that, it makes me wonder about those people. Like, are you willing to change? Which I think is a good conversation for us to have. Are you willing to allow yourself or even encourage yourself to change? Not that you have to. Are you free to? You guys have any thoughts on that?
I think it, not only are you free to, but are you open? Do you have an open mind to change? Because we talked earlier, and in my earlier situation in my life, I had a couple different points of view, and they're 180 degrees from then. But the idea of being able to listen and be willing, and that was all about opinions and stuff. But in general, it happens. There's two points. I'm mixing myself up. I was thinking in terms of when I looked at that picture of us from 2017, how we all looked. And I'll find it somewhere. It's a screen grab or something of all of us on the computer. But when you look at that, you realize how much has changed in 6 or 7 years that you really weren't even conscious of, like how you keep your hair, the clothes you choose to wear, how many times you've seen yourself in an old picture and you're like, why was I wearing that? I would never wear that. You know, those types of things happen unconsciously. And the choice to, you know, what our facial hair looks like over the years and what our hair looks like over the years and the different styles, those things happen unconsciously. But being willing to, I 100%, I've used this example on the show, I remember specifically thinking to myself, I'll never need a CNC machine. I know how to use a bandsaw. And that was more fear-based. But in general, I was convincing myself, there's no reason to need a CNC machine. I could make the same thing over and over again because I've done it before. Then when I learned how to use a CNC machine, I was immediately drawn to it. And that's just a simple example, but there are many tools, techniques, methods, opinions that happen if you're open to it. And the long point I'm making is you need to be open. You need to keep an open mind. And when it came to the CNC machine specifically, I remember ridging up about it and then seeing it at Maker Faire 3 years in a row and going, there's something here. Let me just stop and talk to the ShopBot people. And then I ended up buying a ShopBot, not having the slightest clue of how to use it in 2013. That was my first machine. And it was, in my mind, I was like, all right, if it's in the room with me, I'll figure it out. So I bought this machine and it was just in the room with me. I'm like, okay, that's one step closer to figuring this out. Sat there, unused for a couple of weeks. And then I said, let me just see if I can joggle this thing around. I see people pushing buttons and moving this thing around. Let me just see. And then I slowly warmed up to it. It's like getting a cat for the first time. Hides under the couch for 2 months. You know, it hides under the couch for 2 months until you finally realize it's not gone. It's actually there because you see this poop in the litter box, but you have no idea where the cat is.
Yeah.
I guess my bigger point is you really need to be willing to change. You'll be willing and open to it. And in a way, we all know the person's like, I don't do email. I don't do that stuff. You think to yourself, okay, you're regressing. You're becoming a Neanderthal. You're like the third person from the end of the link chain. You're not upright.
I think one of my strengths is being willing to change and just saying,
you've gone through a lot of changes.
I'm this person now. Maybe one extreme example over my life. This has nothing to do with making or woodworking, but you know, when I was younger, I had one side of my family that was very religious, and that was part of me. And then when I became an adult, I decided that wasn't for me. I don't even believe in any of that stuff. And now recently, I wouldn't say I'm religious, but I am heading more towards, I would say something more spiritual. I feel like I don't subscribe to any religion, but I do feel like there's something more. And I feel like, real quick side note, if being part of a religion makes you a better person, you should be religious. If being an atheist makes you a better person, be an atheist, just be a better person. So we can all just do better. So that's one of the things that's kind of changed within me. I'm a little bit more spiritual and thinking all is we're heading somewhere, or I hope we're heading somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then, I grew up in a very kind of like negative environment where, you know, we didn't have money, and people that did have money were jerks, although my family wouldn't say jerks. And we just had this kind of negative attitude. And then like one day as an adult years ago, I was just like, I don't care anymore. I don't need to have a negative attitude towards other people. I'm just going to do what I want to do. And like recently, I just decided to just tell myself when I wake up, I'm going to say, I'm going to have a good day. I just decide to have a good day. And you wouldn't believe how effective that is when you wake up and you say, I am going to have a good day. You just have a good day. And these are all things that I don't know if it's change or evolution, but I have been open to new ideas. And if we're having a conversation and we disagree about something, I actually am open to hearing another side of the story and changing my thought process or beliefs. And I don't know. I do think being able to change is one of my strengths, and I've done it many times.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can see that from outside of, I mean, you know, I'm not like super outside of you. I'm kind of close to you, but you can see it from the outside, mm-hmm. that you've been willing to and almost actively looked for things to change, to improve and stuff. And I think that's a good
thing. I must honestly say, talking about you, Dave, on the subject of you, when you changed from the drunken woodworker, and I remember thinking, wow, that takes a lot of gumption to be able to look back and say, you know what, I want to change the direction of my branding. And you did it.
I think
I thought that was cool. I wasn't saying that it was a bad thing or anything. I just said, oh, he has reasons for that, but that's a bold move.
Change is exciting. I've changed my careers a few times, and the possibilities are always really exciting for me. Mm. Even just like rearranging the living room just feels so good, and it feels so new. I embrace change. When there's a software update and it's completely different and people are complaining, I'm like, no, this is great. I love being on my toes.
I love not knowing where my apps went.
So I think one of the things about like changing is because you guys know me, you know that I overthink things, and I spend a lot of time thinking about why things are. In trying to decide about making changes in my own life, and these are simple things, right? Just like growing my hair out, getting a tattoo, deciding to wear different types of shoes. There's like little things that have no consequence. Huh?
You got a tattoo?
Yeah.
When, where?
You haven't seen my tattoo?
I don't think so. I don't think I've ever seen that.
I think you showed it off here.
Yeah, I got that. It's the only tattoo I have, but I got that a couple of, when was that? It's been about 2 years now. I think it was 23. Oh. And it's not something I show off to people. I wore long sleeves. Like, nobody but my wife knew that I had it for, my kids didn't even know I had it for, I don't know, 6 months or something. Because that's not the point. The point wasn't like, hey, look at me, I'm a tattoo guy now. It's got a story. It's got a meaning. It's got its own thing that is nobody else's business, right? So making those changes, though, and deciding to make changes about anything about yourself, whether it's insignificant or it's a big life change or whatever, if there's something, these are things that I'm learning. If there's something pushing back on that within you, like, I shouldn't do that. Well, why shouldn't you do that? I started having to think about, why am I not making a change? What is the thing that is in my mind stopping me? And sometimes those are good things, like, you know, getting David's face tattooed on my face. There's something in me that would tell me not to do that for a good reason, right? So I'm not going to do that. But sometimes it's just fear. Sometimes it's just, you know, worrying about what other people would think, or whether something will go right or not, or whatever. And so I think one of the big things for me still is, that our changes are public. And so because we make videos, because we intentionally, put ourselves out there, we are choosing to be seen. And so any change that we make to the way we look, maybe the way we talk, the things that we talk about, those changes are very public. And that wouldn't necessarily be the case with everybody. Maybe it's the people that they run into at work, or, you know, there's still some sort of reaction from other people. The feedback is the thing that often, I think, has stopped me from making changes in my life. But I think another thing that I realized, I was talking to my friend Matt about this. I think there came a point for me where I was looking back at this whole career thing, this whole, like, content thing. And I was blessed with a whole lot of success early on, and things grew and things were great and things were moving in an upward, you know, all the graphs were moving in the correct direction and everything. And I think I fell into the trap of thinking that I had accidentally created a set of variables that made that happen, that made all those graphs go in the right direction. And if I've changed some of those variables, whether that's about, like, what the videos are about, or what I look like, or how I talk, or how I start the video or end the video, or any of those changes, I fell into the trap of thinking that that's going to, like, break the formula, or that's going to, you know, somehow the blessing of my success has been hinged on my performance or my look or my whatever, you know.
And that's all. Yeah, like your lucky t-shirt, no matter what, never wash.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think without realizing it, there was this big, like, I can't change, you know. And even I remember when I got glasses, I remember thinking, like, and this is not a big change for anybody, I get that how stupid this is, but, like, I remember thinking, this is a big change and people are going to say stuff about it. And I totally realize, and I also know that I am, through the comments that we receive, we are often diagnosed.
Oh,
and yeah,
I could go.
I also
on.
Know that I've gotten some people hearing me say that will diagnose me as having anxiety or having whatever, and maybe that's true, and maybe it's not. I don't know, whatever. But the point is, I was able to identify some stuff about why I was not allowing myself to change, and I stepped on that, and I squished it, and I killed it, and I decided I'm going to change because I'm at a point in life where I've been blessed with a whole lot. I'm at the top of that hill that we talked about before, and I'm looking at the downhill stuff kind of for the rest of my life. And I can either decide to be afraid and bound by other people's opinions for the rest of that downhill, or I can enjoy that downhill ride and I can make it into what I want to make it. And I know that sounds a little, like, overblown, I guess, but something in the last couple of years has been significantly changed in how I look at my responsibility to myself and my family versus my responsibility to other people's responses. Hmm. So I started deciding to just, like, I don't know, I'm going to change things. I'm going to do this differently. I'm going to decide to put my time into these different things than what I did before. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is because somebody called it out and it just got me thinking about it. And my response to that calling out is always like, man, that person probably hasn't hit that thing yet, that they haven't hit that point where they're wanting something about themselves to improve or change or whatever. And they haven't, you know, they haven't been able to step on that response yet and like be in control of it. David, you got something?
You mentioned something about just deciding to do this, and it sounds so simplified, and it really is in certain cases. It is just a simple decision of, I am going to be this now. I am going to do this now. You just have to make actually just say it. You like the very first episode, we were like, just get started. You just have to decide to get started. You just have to decide to identify with this type of person. I think both of us have read the book Atomic Habits, and one of the I think there's like 7 steps to becoming to adopt a new habit, and one of them is just to decide to identify with this type of thing. So at one point I decided I am now an artist. I know we've had the conversation in the past where I'm like, I don't know if I'm really an artist, or I haven't met the qualifications yet. No, one day I just decided I'm an artist. And my bio, I think in all of my social media outlets is artist, because I just decided that one day. And you can just decide to wake up and have a good day. You can just decide to be a better person.
Yeah. I mean, I tell this to my kids in different ways, but all the time, you know, dealing with teenagers as an adult is really interesting, but watching them be frustrated with situations in their school, or, you know, what people are doing around them or how people affect them and stuff, has given me a really different perspective as an adult. But one of the things is what you just said, that I try to encourage them. You can be surrounded by terrible behavior and terrible work ethic and all this stuff, and you can let it drag you down, or you can decide what you're going to be. You can decide to be a light in a dark place. You can decide to be a positive influence when there's negative. You can decide to be those things. And then when you decide that, those other variables don't have any control over you. They don't, I mean, they may affect you, but they don't control how you feel and control what you do. Same goes for yourself. You can be surrounded by garbage in a terrible job, in a terrible situation or whatever, but you can decide to do your best at it, or to, you know, to be good, to do well. And that's for the change that I'm talking about. It's not necessarily, you know, deciding to become something different. I just decided I have to stop caring less about.
That was, the point I was going to make.
Feedback, you know, like this like outside weird pressure that maybe even I'm creating myself to not do things because of how other people are going to react to it.
Like, the point I was going to make, I was going to put a button on what I've been thinking. I'm speaking out loud because I've been speaking in my head for a couple minutes. But the biggest thing I notice a lot of people, especially in our space when they're putting the camera on themselves, but in general, as an artist, in general, as somebody that makes things and needs to exhibit them, so many people are concerned about what other people think of them that it inhibits them to be free thinkers. I'm always very, and I've gotten out of that quite a bit. I still have a little bit of that. I think we all do, no matter what. Even the exhibitionists among us who really get out there and do the craziest things and constantly say, I don't care what people think of me. There's a little bit of how they're going to judge me. But in general, if it's inhibiting you and it's holding you back, well, I should put it this way. How many people listening are being held back because they're afraid of what people think of their want or need to change the color of their shirt, or change the car they drive, or use the tool they want, or change the job they have? How many people are held back because of what they're afraid of somebody else thinking of them, judging them, basically? And it's a question that I ask myself all the time. Am I worried about what people are going to think when I do this? I think I'm at a point now where I'm not overly concerned, but there was a point there, especially, I mean, I went to art school. You guys all went to art school. When you're a student in art school, every move you make and everything you do, you're constantly like side-eyeing the person next to you to see if they're reacting to your change of your backpack or if you're going to pick up the right marker. And then you see these kids that were born to be artists and you know, they decided to shave their head in 1984. I'm like, what, how do you so locked in your identity at this point? I don't even know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I chose art school. That was defined obviously over time, but you see these kids in your environment that just so directional. They know exactly what they want out of life. And then you're still trying to figure it out at 35 years old. But the point, the bigger point is you really just got to do things for you. And if it's something you want to do, do it. Most of the people around you are having the same exact anxiety. What do people think of what I'm doing?
That's a good point.
It may only appear that the person next to you has things figured out and knows what
that's
they want to do.
That's true. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But they're a little bit more advanced because they're willing to wear this or that or wear this style or say these things out loud or wear this on their sleeve. And you're like, I wish I had the
I do think art school was good. I was going to bring that up too, because I think it was a good example for me of people who were really comfortable in their own skin. People who just dress in a crazy way and have the craziest piercings and hair and everything that is their own. And I knew so many people who were amazing artists, but also just like they were engulfed in what they did and had their own style and their own way that they talked and moved and all this stuff. And they didn't care. And it wasn't that they didn't care about people. I'm not at all saying
they
that.
They just were unconcerned about others.
They were unconcerned. Okay. That's a good way to put it.
Mm.
Yeah. Unconcerned with the reaction to them because they were so just built into creating things and expressing things. Yeah. And it came out in their clothes and it came out in the weird bikes that they rode and the, you know, like all like art school was so cool in that because it surrounded me with a bunch of people who made me feel so normal. I was like, huh, cool. All right. Well, I can be less normal, right? Like I have permission to be less normal. That's awesome. And so I was also thinking about this. What do you guys think I looked like in high school?
You had long hair in high school.
Buddy Holly?
I think, right?
I did. Yeah. I didn't know if you had ever seen a picture of high school or anything. But I was thinking back to this recently because I had long, long blonde hair, like down to my shoulders with like it was shaved underneath and I would wear it up in a ponytail and I had the baggy jeans and the
90s kids
played in
high fives.
Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, playing in bands and, you know, but it's funny because you have that freedom when you're a teenager. Some people have that freedom to just like really become who they are. And then some people are stuck in caring about what other people think of them and they don't try stuff like that. Or maybe they don't want to try stuff like that. That's fine. But I remember this like the swing, right? So I had this self-expression point in high school and in art school. And then it was like, well, now I got to get a job. So I got to like tame it down a little bit. Even though I work for myself, so I got to, you know, got to fit in, got to be able to communicate with other people and be respectable to a certain degree. And then there's this just weird, and I think this happens to everybody, this weird growing into an adult or like a putting on the skin of an adult so that you can relate to other adults. And then you just get into, this is how I should be now, right? And this is the way I should look and so that I can relate. And so even starting to swing out of that back into like, no, I can be myself. I can do whatever. It's funny looking back over life and seeing those kind of ins and outs of comfort with yourself and being okay. The other, something else I wanted to bring up, just so I'm not talking about myself the whole time.
A little offline conversation going on here.
Jimmy just posted a picture in our text of, that's Anthony Bourdain? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I didn't look like that. Anyway, thanks for derailing that. I wanted to get back to the thing for people listening. if you are not willing to change, or if you are worried about changing something about yourself, and I'm talking about anything, like your job, the way you think, what your opinions are, the way you look, whatever, whether you cry or not, whatever it is. Two things I wrote down that I think are important. One, why don't you change? Make an honest list. If this is something you're struggling with or thinking about, make an honest list of why you don't want to change, what you're worried about. And for me, I wrote down because I have to do it in public and because I fell into the trap of thinking that somehow how I was related to where my job was and how successful I'd been. I totally realize now that it is a gift from God. I am blessed. It has nothing to do with my own ability. And that's a whole nother conversation that we could have someday. But it had nothing to do with how I looked or what I was doing.
Didn't have to and do so with your lucky t-shirt.
I'm sorry?
Didn't have to do with your lucky t-shirt that you never wore.
Exactly, yeah. The other thing is, and I think this is the important one, if you had no feedback, right? Nobody's telling you what they think of you. Nobody is showing you what they think of you. If you had no feedback, what would you change? What are the things about you that, like, if you honestly knew that nobody was going to say anything to you about it, or it was not going to happen,
I'd stop holding my belly in.
That's a legit thing.
I'm not even kidding.
Legit. I do the exact same thing. In certain situations, I find myself tensing my abs just so that my stomach doesn't touch my t-shirt for no reason. Why? You know
Meanwhile,
what I mean?
You weigh 100 pounds. If you're 230, well, then we'll talk.
We were filming yesterday, and we changed the camera angle because it showed me from the side, and it showed, you know, a little bit of belly. And I'm like, nope, that's,
yeah.
I'm not ready to show that.
When right. I see me from the back, I look like a TV, like a TV box in a t-shirt. I'm like, I'm not showing that angle.
But I think that's an important thing. Like, if there was nobody giving you feedback and you didn't feel judged or you didn't feel like you had to qualify your choices to somebody, because that's a big part of it. Mm-hmm. What would you change? You know, like what would you rather be different?
I'd stop changing my clothes and I'd stop taking showers.
I mean, Rachel's the only one that's going to care about that, honestly. So, like,
Rachel works in the city most of the time. So when she's in the city for 3 days or 4 days a week.
Yeah, man. It's like shower
I don't change
week,
my clothes. Good. And I sometimes I go to sleep with my shoes on. She'll always say to me in the morning, she's like, did you get under the covers last night? And I go, no, I actually just slept on top. She's like, oh, will you get under the covers? Mm-hmm. I usually just go to bed. I just lay on top of the bed like a corpse and wake up and go right back to it.
Wow, you're so weird. I'm just kidding.
It's not every night. You know,
see, no feedback. Like you don't want that
when
feedback.
She's around.
Anyway, I think that's important to start to look at stuff like that. You know, and maybe your people listening are totally happy with all of these things and they don't feel the need to change. I'm not. That's great. But the whole thing is like the feedback that I get, I have to temper my reaction to it a lot, and I know that about myself. And so I'm sure I'm not the only one that has to – that.
So, this is a phrase that I've adopted and really helps me react to a situation. So I'm in a previous version of David. I would overreact to things. I could be a hothead. I could
Me too.
Smash something.
Me too.
Something, somebody's on some show or movie or something, I heard this phrase that said respond, not react. Yeah. Something about that phrase just clicked with me. And now I still have my moments where I break, but for the most part, I don't overreact, or I don't identify as that person that overreacts to things. I give it a second and I respond to it. Respond, not react.
You know what? You know what got me? And I think of it all the time. This is going to be so stupid. This is like a movie quote. I judge wisely as if nothing ever surprised me. You guys know that line?
No.
Come on, Dave. Jizza the genius.
Oh, that's good. See?
Yeah, I knew you know.
Hip hop has some of the best lines.
I judge wisely as if nothing ever surprised me.
Yeah. So, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a similar way, there's, and not to go Bible or anything, but there's a Bible verse in James about being slow to speak, quick to listen and slow to anger. And like, whether you are into the rest of it or not, like what a great set of guidelines for how you react to stuff, you know?
Great teaching. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something I honestly have tried to, I try to do that with comments, and my slow to speak is just don't speak usually. But with my kids, I think that is that type of reaction to a teenager is, I think it's refreshing to them because you're not immediately trying to solve the thing. You're not immediately trying to give your own perspective and your own history on like, yeah, I was in high school too, and I know it's hard, and I had, you know, just like listening to them, like letting my kids vent and get through all of the thing, and then asking if I can give some like clarity or give some experience and stuff. They are far more like willing to take that than me jumping in and being like, oh yeah, we'll do this, don't do this, you know? So anyway, I don't know. You guys have any other thoughts on this? I hope I didn't good. Like, I hope I didn't commandeer the entire conversation.
It's just another good therapy session.
That was a good one.
Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters. And then if you guys, I've got two things to recommend.
What?
I know.
Is that 2 weeks in a row? Doesn't have
something. Yeah, it might be. Good. Cool. Big thanks to everybody on Patreon that supports the show. Honestly, it really does mean a lot. And I know I say that every week, and I don't know how to say it in a way that makes it sound more true every week, but it's true. We are grateful for the fact that this show is completely supported by people on Patreon. We don't have sponsors. We've never had to look for sponsors. We've always just had support of the people who enjoy listening, and that it means a lot. It makes it happen. And yeah, we're just really grateful for it. And we get a lot of comments through Patreon. Those are the only ones that we read, the only ones I read anyway. Our messages through Patreon to us telling us like, things that people, you know, react to the show, or if they have, if we ask a question and they've got like cool recommendations or stuff, all that comes in through Patreon. So really grateful for all that support, especially the people that go above and beyond, who really like shell out extra money to make this happen. Big thank you to Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albert's Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Maincrafting, Rich at Low and Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, Matthias Garnow, and a pretty big deal. There's, you know, they go above and beyond, so thank you. And then there's also extra other people, like, let me find the list of other people, like Pierce Workshop has been supporting for a couple of years now.
Thank you.
So thank you for that, Jamie. And if you want to get the after show, everybody who supports on Patreon at every level gets the after show, and that is available through Patreon. So you got to sign up over there at any level, and then you can put that in your podcast player. You just go to patreon.com/makingit, and you can check all the stuff out over there. Thank you. All right, Jimmy, what you got?
I got a message from Kelly, who I'm going to see in England. So, Kelly, thank you very much. Template Maker. You guys go to this website? Template Maker.
I think I have seen that one. Is it the the template maker from the Netherlands?
Yes, that's the one. I haven't delved into it deeply. I have it here. I'll send you guys the link. I just opened it up this morning before we got on the podcast, and it looks like there's all solutions to packaging design that you could most likely, I'm guessing you could download the files. Yeah. And yeah, there's
I'm pretty sure David and I have both told you about this site before. So throw that out there, but
it even has a coffin.
Oh, there's a coffin. Pattern. Yeah.
Coffin pattern.
Yeah, I haven't seen the coffin. That's cool.
Yeah.
I used this one time to figure out the right shape for a cone. And I can't even remember what the project was, but there was something about I needed to figure out the two diameters and to get the right size cone or something.
I've been contemplating making a wheelbarrow on the plasma table.
Whoa.
And I'm going to design what the majority of the parts of a wheelbarrow bucket look like, flat, and then bring them together and rivet them, make it look an old school. That's something we're going to
say. That's going to be cool.
You could also do that with the sheet metal environment in Fusion.
Fusion,
yeah. It's a similar thing where you can you know, make a surface and then you can fold up other surfaces and get them.
Oh, okay. That's a good excuse for me to learn that again.
And then you can flatten it all back out for your files. It's
oh, that's amazing. All right. That's going to be a project. That's going to be a good learning experience for me then. I'm going to design a foldable wheelbarrow out of like 10 gauge steel. All right. Thank you.
I think that has potential. I'm never right about this stuff, but that has potential of being a very well performing video. Cause I'm picturing this folded sheet metal wheelbarrow, and the thumbnail could be phenomenal with that.
Thank you.
Again, I am not executive, I'm terrible at predicting that stuff.
Cool.
My pick is Nate from the internet. Do you remember Nate from the internet?
Oh yeah. Talk to Nate all the time.
Great. He's got a popcorn video, how to make popcorn better than the movie theater. And unfortunately, I forgot about Nate from the internet. And I saw this video, just kind of came up in my feed. I'm like, oh, yeah, I need to subscribe to this dude. He was with the King of Random, correct?
Correct. Yes.
All right. Yeah.
He's in the middle of 3D printing a Lego castle 20 times, I think it's 20 times the size of the original Lego set. So it's pretty fascinating. He figured out how to scale up a Lego brick and print it in parts so that you can snap them together and screw on the stud, but then you can make two of those and they snap together. And so he's making all of the pieces this big to rebuild a castle. And it's like you could walk in it. It's so cool. It's huge. Wow. And it's going to take like a year to do. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Awesome. So I was giving him some ideas about some things that I want to help him. I want to make for the castle, I think.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool ideas.
And I thought Lego's legal department was pretty strong handed.
They are, but I think everybody has now figured out what is okay and what you can get away with. Okay. So he calls them Lego style bricks. And I think something about the patent might've actually expired as well. So there's certain things that you can kind of copy or replicate, you know, and like we sell plans for a Lego table and we can't do that. They won't, we have to call it a brick building table. Cause they came at us for it, but it's more about using trademark, I think, than the design of the brick. No.
Gotcha.
Maybe something like that. I have two things. One is a video that I just randomly came across, and it's not anybody I know, but it's by Matthew Encina, and it's How I Brought My First Product to Market, Idea to Launch. And it's him working with this other company, GroveMade. His company is called Mod Musings, and I don't know anything about either one of them, but they work together to make like a note-taking kit for your desktop. And it's a really nice, the kit itself is cool, but the video is cool more. It was the thing that got my attention because it's about the design process and it's about collaboration between two people who have, you know, overlap, but have specialty and like how they work together in the process they went through to get something. And it's like 11 minutes long, but it's a good video. The other one is this crazy thing that I think is real, pretty sure this is real, called the Volonaut air bike. Have you seen this? Mm-hmm. This is I know you're not, neither one of you big Star Wars people, but have you ever seen like the speeder bikes in Star Wars? It's like a floating bike. Oh, yeah,
I've seen, I know what you're talking about. I've seen this come across my feed. It's a guy makes one that seems to work.
No, this is like a company that has made one that works. It's not just like a one-off thing, like they're going to be selling these. It is crazy. It's like a hover bike that has no propeller. It's a jet or something. I don't even understand. It's wild.
Somebody jetting directly into a brick wall.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's using it out in the middle of like nowhere over a river and everything, or he or she or whoever's driving it. I don't know, but it's really cool. And I won't ever buy one. I don't have any reason to have one, but it's like, you know, it's one of those things you grow up watching Star Wars and you think like, oh, maybe someday we'll have speeders, and it's real. It like works. So the video is really cool, and they haven't put out any information about release or price or, you know, anything. But just watching the video of it move around. And they even did like a joke for May the 4th. they got somebody in a stormtrooper costume riding on one through the woods to kind of replicate Return of the Jedi. And anyway, it's really cool. But those are the two things that I have. You guys got anything else for this week? Right on.
That's it.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you for letting us talk.
Thank you. And thank you to Dave from DTB. And thank you to Keith from Blackfield Concepts for helping me out with the car.
Word up.
Catch you guys next podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I'm sorry.
Did you say that you love them?
I love those guys. I do love those guys. And you. And Dave.
Aww.
Say goodnight.